Calling 911 when in an accident may just not be enough. Car accident, remember. After 911, call 411. 1-800-411-PAIN. 1-800-411-PAIN is a legal and medical referral service. Non-employee spokesperson.
Greg, I'll be right there. Hang on. Looking in the studio, is Lawrence Timmons here? I don't see him. Wow, that was a big story out at the Dolphins facility today, the training facility. Certainly, we asked Adam Gase and the players about the game and the victory yesterday, 19-17 over the Los Angeles Chargers. All right. See, I rolled that right off my tongue. But certainly, Timmons was a main topic of conversation there. And yesterday, the reporters that were out in L.A. Were told by a media relations vice president that Adam Gase will address the Timmons situation after the game. After the game, he certainly was asked about it. He said, I'm still gathering information. I'll talk to you tomorrow, meaning today. At his press conference today at 3 o'clock, I open up the questioning and ask him about that, and black holes have shed more light than Adam Gase did on Lawrence Timmons, okay? Just refused to, we're going to play some sound after headlines, but he refused to talk about it, shed any light. You could tell he was pissed off. He was really pissed off that this happened, you know, just on the eve of the game. And when asked by Barry Jackson, you know, will he be on the team in the future, he declined to answer. He said he hasn't talked to Timmons. Now, this is the part that seems improbable. You know, is Timmons even in the building? I have no idea. Nothing goes on in that building without Adam Gase knowing about that. So I'm a bit dubious. But, you know, the Dolphins overcame so many obstacles to win yesterday, you know, just from traveling out there now 10 days ago to escape Hurricane Irma, to players wondering about their houses, worried about their families, everything that went involved in that, practicing in a different facility, not sleeping in your own bed, just the whole, athletes are creatures of habit. And when you throw that routine out of kilter, it can affect them. And they overcame all of that and emerged with a victory.
Yeah, it wasn't pretty. Some would describe it as lucky, but it doesn't matter how you get the wins in the National Football League. Adam Gase, the Dolphins, shouldn't apologize for anything. They come away with that 19-17 victory, thanks in part to two missed field goals by kicker Youngway Koo, including that last one with 5 seconds left from 44 yards out. Also, that pairs with the Cody Parkey 54-yard field goal, which who would have thought, you know, we were discussing the decision by Darren Rizzi largely, but the Dolphins organization to change both punter and kicker right out of training camp at the final cuts. They replace Andrew Franks with Cody Parkey, who had missed 3 field goals against the Dolphins in that Browns game last season. So all of us thought, despite all the statistics, it's like, that's the guy that you're bringing in. And, you know, this is a guy who comes through in his first opportunity to impress his new teammates and coaching staff, making 4 field goals, including this clutch kick. So congratulations to him. And, you know, overall, though, I would say this. Doesn't matter how ugly, doesn't matter how lucky, a win is a win. And this was a big win when you consider how difficult the schedule is going to be later on in the season.
Yeah, and they should go to 2-0 next week, if I could look ahead for 6 days. But you're not really playing an NFL team. You're playing the Jets. I know, on any given Sunday, .. But they did. They overcame it. You know, and God, I was doing the postgame show with Zach yesterday. You'd have thought the Dolphins had lost that game. Just everything negative. Almost everything negative. I mean, but sure. I mean, there were things that were bad. Adam Gase's play calling in the first half, I thought, was just awful, incredibly conservative. And he acknowledges that. And he talked about it today. And the game management, the clock management, end of the game, calling a timeout. We'll play that soundbite as well a bit later, why he did that. Adam Gase, in my opinion, had a bad day at the office, and they still won.
I agree. There was a lot to question from the game as a whole. I mean, you could criticize the play on different sides of the ball. You criticize some of the coaching decisions. I thought there were some issues early in the game on special teams as well. So we're going to nitpick. We can do that. At the end of the day, though, they're 1-0. And if you look at the AFC standings, they're sitting atop the standings.
Sole possession of first
because
place.
They don't have a loss. They haven't played 2 games, and everybody else is either 0-2 or 1-1, including the Bills and Patriots being in that 1-1 category. Jets, as you mentioned, the feeders, and they will be the entire season. But You know, listen, we can criticize Adam Gase, and I was happy to hear him own up to the fact that he didn't have a very good game as a play caller and some of the clock management stuff that we'll get into. But listen, I know this sounds like it's putting makeup on a pig, so to speak, but Josh, in the NFL, it's so difficult to win games week in and week out that you don't complain or criticize too much, especially the week one when you're working out some of the wrinkles. You already talked about the circumstances they had to overcome. I think this was an impressive victory, 19-17, considering all of that. But I guess my bigger question here is, are these the new Dolphins? And Armando Salguero, I thought, hit the nail on the head with the sentiment in his column today, in which, you know, for years, when things don't go well late in games or in games in general, it's like, oh, yep, there's the Dolphins again.
We've seen that movie before.
This happens all the time. The Dolphins are either cursed or they've done it to themselves. Whatever it is, we knew they would make the mistakes when the game was on the line and they would give the game away to the opponent. We saw it over and over again. But it seems that now with Adam Gase in the fold after those first four or five games of his debut season, this team wins those close games. This team gets the breaks. This team, when it seems that they've shot themselves in the foot or that things aren't going their way, that things turn around for them and they win and have a knack for winning these close games. So perhaps we're seeing, coinciding with Adam Gase's arrival here, this new era of Dolphins football, in the sense that in these scenarios, things now break their way, which is something we hadn't seen for years with this Miami Dolphins organization.
I think they've won 10 of the last 12 regular season games. And again, you're right. Now, for instance, Cody Parkey, you get the ball within a range. I mean, it's a small sample size, just 6 kicks in his NFL career. But the former Auburn kicker, 6 kicks from 50 yards on out, he's made them all.
By the way, did you have confidence in, let's say, that last sequence of play calling slash leading up to the kick?
Yeah.
Did you have confidence they'd gotten him far enough up the field?
I knew he was 5 for 5 in his career, but that was that, no, I was, you know, I was skeptical. I was kind of glasses half empty.
I was getting so nervous because I'm like, oh my gosh. So they throw the screen. I know why they ran Jay Ajayi a couple times there. He was running hard. He was making the most of every carry. But then when they run that screen pass to him, which gets like a yard,
right,
and I'm thinking, throw the ball down the field. Give Parkey some more room to work with here, because if you're expecting him to step in and make a 50-plus yard field goal to win this game, I mean, that's asking a lot of this kid. And, hey, they did, and he answered the bell. So good for him, and awesome story. He's from Jupiter.
Jupiter.
So he's kind of a South Florida kid, if you include, you know, the Palm Beaches as well, and grew up a Dolphins fan. So does it get any better than that? that you know, he comes to the Dolphins kind of late in the process here to start this season, and in week one, not only makes those first three field goals, but then kicks a game winner for the team he grew up rooting for.
I'll tell you a story that Adam Gase told us about them going and trying to get Cody Parkey. By the way, I asked him, does anybody call you Parker? He goes, not anymore. Not on this team. So, I mean, because you're inclined to say Parker. Parkey, what kind of name is Parker? It's got to be Parker, right? I misread that, or I, you know, that was not right. It's Parkey.
Well, it's an odd name because it's also spelled E-Y instead of just Parkey with just the Y.
Right.
Yeah.
Or double E's.
Exactly. But I'm sure if anybody did call him Parker, Devontae put an end to that.
That's right. Yeah. All right, we will continue with this, but first let's go to headlines.
Here's what's trending now in Miami on The Ticket. WAXYAM South Miami and FM 104.3 HD2 Miramar.
The radio home of the Miami Heat.
Where is Lawrence Timmons? One day after the Dolphins beat the Chargers 19-17 on the road in Los Angeles with Timmons AWOL from the team, his absence remains a mystery. Following yesterday's game, Adam Gase said he'd address the situation today, but earlier this afternoon at his press conference in Davie, he refused to shed any light on it. The Marlins, winners of just 3 of their last 20 games, host the Mets tonight. Now, should the Marlins lose, Greg, and I know we're going to have, you know, have play taps later, they would officially be eliminated from wild card contention. It's just going to take one Marlins loss or one Rockies win, and I believe the Rockies are idle tonight, to eliminate them, and they can make their offseason plans. I just hope I'd point that out for any fans holding out the smallest glimmer of hope.
Well, and based on their recent form, we would not be surprised if tonight is the night.
Oh, I'm sure it will be. Chargers head coach Anthony Lynn. This is surprising considering what we witnessed yesterday. Chargers head coach Anthony Lynn said he's sticking with rookie kicker. Now, Young Wei, it's spelled Young Ho, but it's pronounced Young Wei, right?
Yes.
Younghoe Koo.
I looked that up because he played at Georgia State. So I looked that up on their pronunciation guide this weekend because I looked at his name. I'm like, his name can't be Younghoe, can it? And it's spelled that way, but it's pronounced Younghoe Koo.
Well, his name is Mud among his teammates, I'm sure. But Anthony Lynn said they're not going to bring in any competition at the position this weekend. He will play for the Chargers next week. Now, he was wide right on a field goal attempt. You would have thought he went to Florida State, right? That would have defeated the Dolphins yesterday, and it was one of the two kicks he missed. He also, if you remember, in week one, had a 44-yard attempt that was blocked, and it would have tied the game against the Broncos. He's 1-4 in the season. Greg, once yesterday's game ended, I fully expected him to be waived today and then bringing in, hell, I'd rather have Roberto Aguayo.
Oh, that's saying something right there.
You know, maybe they should rename, what do you think, Grant? Maybe they should rename Hurricane Maria Hurricane Younghoe Koo. That way we know it'll miss South Florida.
Oh, right? There you go. Man, that's certainly
wide right.
Wide right. That's what we want, exactly. We want that wide right.
Oh, yeah. I mean, what a rough start to his career. By the way, it was Georgia Southern where he went to school. I said Georgia State. But, again, I mean, he's coming from FCS. And I think a nice story coming out of training camp for them, right, that you get this kicker that not many people have heard of and he wins the job. But what a terrible start to his career between – last week at Denver on Monday Night Football, getting a potential game-tying kick blocked at the buzzer, and then yesterday missing another field goal early in the game and then missing the potential game winner. I don't know how Anthony Lynn keeps this guy around. Seriously, I know he's a rookie head coach and you got a rookie kicker. I don't know how he's keeping this kicker around.
Rivers was yelling at him from the sideline, yelling at the kicker. I mean, he, you can see, obviously, he's incredibly intense during games.
Oh, yes. And you talk to any former player or current player that will be candid with you, but most former players are more candid about it because they don't have to worry about the locker room repercussions, is that nobody really likes the kicker. I mean, they don't. I mean, if he does his job, they all respect him, and that's good to go. But the moment the kicker starts missing kicks, he loses the locker room. Nobody's got his back anymore. So
you see when the team works out, you've covered enough practices that the whole team, sometimes they split up offense and defense, but the whole team, for instance, practices on the practice field in Davie, and the special teams guy, the punter, the kicker, the long snapper, they go on their own. They're a whole other entity.
Right. There's a huge separation there between the two. Now, you know, there are some exceptions. If you got like an Adam Vinatieri on the team. And
future Hall of Famer.
Right,
sure.
Guys who are legends. But, you know, other than that, it's a week-to-week thing as a kicker in terms of whether you're in favor with the organization, whether you're out of favor with the organization, and the same goes with the locker room. So that's the way I've always heard it described. It's like if you show up, do your job, make the kicks, good. Other than that, we don't want to hear anything else from you. Seriously, because like if Phillip Rivers has got to be looking – at the way his team has played, and they get off to a slow start against a really tough Denver defense in week one, but they still rally back from a 24-7 deficit to have a chance to force overtime, and the only reason they can't do so is because the kicker misses and gets the kick blocked. And then the same thing yesterday, they miss out on 6 points over the course of the game because this guy can't do his job properly. I mean, that's got to fire you up if you're any other member of the roster for that San Diego team, or gosh, Los Angeles Chargers team. There you go.
I was listening to the interviews we did in the locker room today, and I was, you know, asking Juwan James about the Chargers, and I didn't notice at the time, but I said San Diego. And when I listened to it, I'm like, oh my, I made that mistake. But Gase said that Darren Rizzi, the special teams coordinator, and members of the front office obviously keep very careful track who was cut and everything like that. But he's always on the lookout for possible special teams players if they, you know, the Dolphins might target if they're cut. And one of the guys they were targeting, because I think Cleveland actually drafted a kicker, they were just keeping their eye out for Cody Parkey. And that was one of the guys they were going to target if he was released. And in fact, he was. And they brought him on board because of that. And, you know, Parkey, again, a local kid. I asked him if he ever went to Dolphins games. He said they went to about one a year. You know,
which
he played offensive line like when he first started playing football. So he was young.
Well, that's a trek from Jupiter, too. So for them to go to, I mean, that's pretty committed right there as a Dolphins fan. I mean, I know that when Andrew Franks was replaced and, you know, maybe that wasn't as big of a surprise, but certainly when Matt Darr was replaced by Matt Hawk, you know, we were just talking about the specialist being completely revamped. Certainly now that we have just 1 week's worth of game film and one game to go on, a terrific decision to get Parkey in here. And nothing against Franks, but he didn't have a lot of opportunities last year. But I'd say that Cody Parkey announce his presence with this Dolphins team in a big way for their first game of the season.
You know, there's a lot to talk about. There are a lot of layers to this game yesterday that we're going to talk about, starting with next segment. I mean, there's, you know, what went well. And for me, the biggest thing, and we'll delve into this much deeper, is the rush defense. I mean, I was shocked at just how well they – and you didn't play some schlub. You played Melvin Gordon, who's a damn good runner.
Right. And I thought the moment we found out that Lawrence Timmons news, well, even before that, we knew, and that's something you and I have talked about quite a bit, is that the run defense was so porous, not just last year, but it just has been over the last few seasons, that that was going to be a difficult matchup for them against Melvin Gordon. Then when you find out that Lawrence Timmons goes AWOL, they don't know where the heck he is, and they finally find him, but he's not playing in the game. It's like, they stand no chance to have a solid run defense right. performance. And then at the end of the game, you look at the stat sheet, it's like, they only give up 44 yards on the ground? But where was that the
and
last
I think,
few
what,
years?
26 was on one run.
By Brandon Oliver, yeah. of all people.
Yeah. It wasn't even Gordon. And you take that away, it's just, it's a phenomenal average with the run. It's off the charts without the run.
Right. So, you know, all of the questions surrounding that weakness or perceived weakness, I mean, I don't know how they're going to keep this up. Potentially, they do that over the next 15 games, and maybe they prove us all wrong. And Matt Burke looks like he's just an unbelievable coach. But, man, I did not see that coming. That was a real pleasant surprise to come out of all this, that you're playing, starting two backup linebackers alongside Kiko Alonso, including Chase Allen.
An undrafted free agent.
A lot of Dolphins fans hadn't even heard of until Lawrence Timmons went AWOL, and they put up that kind of performance. Bravo to them.
I can just see Allen calling his parents. Hey, Ma? Guess what? I'm starting today. No, seriously, son. Come on, what? No, Mom, I'm telling the truth. No, come on. Well, okay, enough of a joke.
Right.
Mom, I'm starting today.
Really, really cool. By the way, on a complete side note, but related to football, Odell Beckham Jr. active tonight.
He is
the
active. Okay. So. I kept him on the bench.
Well, you know, you've got such a good team. You don't need Odell Beckham Jr.
Now. I'm kind of lucky. I will play when he does play again. I hope he does. I know you need him to do well tonight.
I do, so I'll be watching with one eye, Monday Night Football, and then the other eye, you, as we do this show.
That's Greg Likens. I'm Frito. We'll take it till 10 o'clock, joined by Adam Beasley, fresh back from California. He'll join us at 8:15, but a lot to talk about. What went well, what didn't go well, Gase's play calling, his clock management, dinking and dunking with Jarvis Landry, Parker showing athleticism, Jay Ajayi. We're going to, of course, review Jay Cutler. You know, and the game he had. I think, to me, the most important stat about Jay Cutler and the team in general, no turnovers.
Yes.
None. All right, we will talk about a lot of that. And he's Greg Likens. I'm Frito. Back after this. A couple of texts that came in here, Greg, on the Coral Springs Auto Mohana text line, 67974. Tony Sperano would love Cody Parkey.
You're fist pumping all over the place.
Absolutely.
That's what they might remember the StubHub Center for if he was still the coach, just fist pumping all over the place. Because there weren't a lot of fans there fist pumping, at least not Chargers fans.
No, I mean, Jason Jenkins, one of the Dolphins' vice president of media relations, showed me a video he took yesterday in the 27,000-seat stadium, and part of the upper deck, the second deck, if you will, was tarped off. That's how pathetic the attendance was. Now, someone texted into the show, they only ran the ball, they being the Chargers, 14 times. How could you possibly judge the run defense? Fair question. But I will look at it from the other side of the prism. I think that the Chargers saw how well the Dolphins were defending the run and therefore went to pass. They just abandoned that part of their offense.
Yeah, I think it was a combination of that and also the fact that the Dolphins linebackers aren't good in coverage. So we saw a lot of the middle of the field open up for Phillip Rivers in terms of where they were targeting a lot of their passes. Hunter Henry was involved, the tight end. Antonio Gates caught a touchdown. So I think that was a combination of the fact that the run defense was stout early on, and then also they could exploit some matchups there in the middle of the field. So, you know, it's fair. 14 carries is not a great sample size, and we'll know more about this run defense over the next few weeks. But, man, considering they were 30th in the league last year,
yes,
and they've been abysmal against the run in general the last few years, I would try to be positive about this. I mean, there's going to be plenty of games and weeks the rest of the year where we can criticize the run defense, and we've done it for the last two or three years as is. So on a day where they actually perform well, let's give them some credit. That's the way I look at it. We don't have to be overwhelmingly negative about everything.
No, and I look, I was saying to Zach last night on the postgame show, because he was very negative about a lot of things. There were a lot of things that went wrong last night, you know, yesterday, and, you know, a lot of things that didn't go well. But I sound like a coach now, coach speak, but this is a process, all right? In theory, you hope to be better in game four than you are in game one, and better in game six than in game four. You improve each week. You listen to coaches or players talk about daily practices. I want to get better just by a little bit today than I was yesterday. Gase, even though he coached Cutler 2 years ago, is learning about him and how he meshes. I mean, how many snaps has Cutler had with the first team offense? Almost, you know, a few. That's it. So he's learning how this team meshes, what works well, what doesn't, what plays work well for Jay Cutler, what doesn't. And he was more conservative. I texted, I think, you last night. I said, Gase's play calling, well, you know, in the first half was more conservative than a Republican Congress. And it was just, but then he took the handcuffs off in the third and fourth quarters, and the play calling changed. There were some bad aspects to this, but they all of that combined, and they still emerged with a victory 3,000 miles away.
Well, after the
Lawrence Timmons, by the way,
after the first offensive possession, because I thought that was a really positive drive to start the game, and they mixed things up, and heck, even Jarvis Landry attempted a pass, which was that play didn't go very well. But you know, they were doing some different things. Jay Ajayi got going. Devontae Parker was involved. Landry was involved as a receiver. I really enjoyed that first offensive possession.
Yep.
But after that, in the first half, I could have sworn that Chad Henne was back at quarterback because they kept checking down and these short passes over the middle.
Dink and dunk.
Yeah, I mean, it was like, what the heck is going on here? I mean, all we heard about since Jay Cutler showed up is this strong arm. He's going to be taking chances down the field. We didn't see any of that for the majority of the first half. Second half, they opened things up a little bit. The Kenny Stills touchdown drive was a nice one. And I'll say this, though, for those who want to be critical of this, I stand by my comment that you don't apologize for a win and you take the W however you can get it and you get that one in the win column to start the season. But there was an element of luck involved. I think we can all say that because and every week there is one way or the other. Dolphins got a lot of breaks in this game. They overcame the poor play calling.
Mm-hmm.
They also overcame the fact that Jay Cutler put a couple of balls up there that Devontae Parker absolutely bailed him out on. I mean, you and I discussed the Jay Cutler experience, and the Jay Cutler experience yesterday looks terrific. 24-33, 230 yards, a touchdown, no turnovers, an over 100 rating in terms of his passer rating, but that could have easily gone the other way. Devontae Parker flat-out stole an interception from Casey Hayward.
That was an unbelievable
play. Casey Hayward, I guarantee, is going to have nightmares about that the rest of this week.
How did this guy behind me just steal that ball?
Just stole it from him.
And Casey Hayward led the league last year in interceptions.
Right,
this isn't a schlub.
That's what he does well. So that happened, and there were a couple of other plays where Jay Cutler improvised, forced it a couple of times.
The touchdown pass to Stills. I mean, and he saw the coverage. It was a linebacker covering Kenny Stills.
Right, but my point is that the Dolphins got lucky to a certain degree because in certain weeks, I think some of those passes will be intercepted and will turn into turnovers. Things went their way yesterday, and you don't apologize for that.
Not at all.
And at the end of the day, you leave with a two-point victory. Get out of L.A., get back to South Florida, and say, all right, on to week two.
I don't apologize for lucky things that happen to a team, and lucky things and unlucky things happen to every team at some point. I don't apologize for people to say, well, look, you're beating bottom feeders. Okay, it's the team on your schedule. How can we control who's on our schedule? The schedule is given to us. That's the next team that's up. You know, even if they're a terrible team, that's who we're playing. All right, let's play some Adam Gase sound from his 3 o'clock press conference today in Davie. Here's the first one saying, dealing with Timmons is not my top priority.
Nothing to add for what I have right now. I'm really just gathering a lot of information. And I got a few other things I got to deal with the guys that played yesterday.
See, he's, you know, just dealing with the guys right here, right now. And here's a conversation that he had with a member of the media here, Steve Wine of the Associated Press. Was asking about team rules, and here's saying players shouldn't violate the few rules that I have.
Do you consider yourself to be a coach who has a lot of rules or just a few pretty basic ones?
Be on time and play hard. I don't know if that's real hard.
So with those being the rules, when those are violated in your mind, I mean, what's your tolerance level generally?
What do you think? I got two rules. Not hard.
I got two rules, not hard. A little chippy with the media today. And look, he's mad. He's pissed off at Lawrence Timmons. You could tell. He didn't say that overtly, but you could just read between the lines that he is not. And why should he be? I mean, he should be pissed off. I don't blame him at all.
Well, and then part of it, I think, is you consider the source, right? Because if you've got just some young knucklehead guy who comes into the team with that reputation, then you know you might have to do a little extra babysitting.
Right.
I mean, Lawrence Timmons came with a sterling reputation. He had played in 101 straight games. He has been not only durable on the football field, but is still beloved in Pittsburgh with his teammates there in terms of his leadership in the locker room. So the fact that this is the source of Adam Gase's frustrations, I think, makes it even more upsetting to him and even more frustrating, because when they sign him to a lucrative contract in the offseason, they don't anticipate any baggage like this. Now, if you have baggage like this with some players, again, sometimes it's more expected than others. This is completely out of left field, completely unexpected. So when you say that Adam Gase is upset about it, I think it's not just, yeah, this scenario would upset a coach in at any point in time, but when you consider that it's Lawrence Timmons who's creating this headache, I don't think he ever would have expected that. And so I think that complicates matters as well and makes him even more frustrated and upset.
Well, not only caught the coaches off guard, but caught the players too. Here's Mike Pouncey today saying, and again, this is Lawrence Timmons, what he's played 10, 11 years, shown no signs of this whatsoever, none. And whatever it is, and here's Mike Pouncey saying the situation blindsided all of us.
Caught everyone off guard, you know what I mean? That, you know, he was doing so well, you know, there wasn't any signs at all. And we just hope that he's doing okay and that he's fine and that he's coming back ready to play some football.
So, you know, it befuddles everybody what's going on. The Dolphins, I'm sure, know more than what they're saying. Now, Adam Beasley had a good tweet saying if this is a medical issue, and we have no idea if it is or is not. TMZ was reporting that, the team and the police caught up with Timmons in a Los Angeles airport waiting to board a flight back to Pennsylvania to see his daughter and his daughter's mother. Now, you know, I don't know if that's been confirmed or not. That's what they are reporting. But it's just, it's thrown the team for a loop. And now, you know, suddenly you had, you know, some inexperienced linebackers and they came and overcame a tremendous hurdle. I honestly don't know if Timmons is going to be back with the team. Gase was noncommittal when asked by Barry Jackson, will he be back with the team? He declined to answer. I mean, they could suspend him for up to 4 games and he would get a fine of, it's a little less than $250,000.
He'd be suspended without pay.
Right, for 4 games. That's the most they can do.
Right. Within the bylaws of the CBA, that's the steepest price that he would have to pay in terms of some sort of suspension or a penalty levied from the team without being flat-out cut. But the TMZ report, I think the wording of it was interesting. And again, it's TMZ, so consider the source. I mean, they're reputable, but they might not have all the details here. They say in this article, our sources say the team scrambled to find him, calling family and close friends before ultimately filing a missing persons report with local law enforcement. The good news, cops found Timmons at LAX early Sunday morning in a boarding area in an effort to go to Pennsylvania. A team rep met Timmons at the airport and left with him. But then they say, to the details you were describing, so why Pennsylvania? We're told Timmons, this is in their words, had spoken with his baby mama who lives there and had told her he missed the baby and wanted to visit. He was serious about visiting her. Now, this just doesn't make any sense.
No, there's something there. There are layers to this that we don't know.
Right, because if you want to visit your child, then you can do so after the game. You could fly the child out there. I mean, and there's got to be more to it than just, oh, I suddenly have this impulse where I want to see my child, and my child's in Pennsylvania.
Yeah, there's a lot we don't know. Now, Adam Beasley said, again, if it's a medical issue, then the Dolphins are really handcuffed as to how much they can say, as any employer would be because of these things called HIPAA laws.
Right, so if this is a mental health situation,
well, that would fall under that umbrella.
Right, then that would fall under that umbrella, and then it would suddenly bring you back just to a few years ago where we had another scenario which you never would have thought see would happen on a football team with the Jonathan Martin situation.
Yep.
Right? I mean, that's one of the things where my mind raced to, and one of the situations my mind raced to, because when we found out that the starting left tackle of the Miami Dolphins had entered the cafeteria of the facility and then walked out and was never seen again. It's like, wait, well, how does this all make any sense whatsoever? And then once
that was on a Monday, I think.
And once we find out, you know, start peeling the layers back, we realize that in part it was, yes, a bullying scandal, but two, also a mental health issue with him.
Right.
And, you know, we eventually found all that in the Wells report and more details than I think any of us even wanted. So I wonder if this is something similar, not bullying, but something similar in terms of mental health, because, again, I use this term and sometimes use it casually. I don't mean to use it in a crass nature, but who in their right mind the day before a game decides that it's more important to go see a child if it's just because they want to see the child and there's no emergency? Most of the time, Josh, if you talk to players, DJ and I were talking about this yesterday on the pregame show because the news broke.
Right.
And we were like, oh my gosh. Most of the time, if Lawrence Timmons called up Adam Gase and said, hey, I really need to see my child, you know, there's some extenuating circumstances, then I think one of two things may happen. Either Adam Gase and the team gets a private jet and flies the child out, or Lawrence Timmons, who just signed for $11 million guaranteed, does the same thing. Right. But they don't leave the team and don't get ready for the game that they've committed to, that, you know, we've known they're going to play the entire offseason.
I mean, look, if his child, say, went and all of a sudden was in an emergency and hospitalized, the team lets him go, even the day before a game.
Right.
Of course, they're extenuating circumstances. But you miss your child? Well, you know, shoot, I miss my kids when I don't see them, you know, during the day. I'll see them in the morning. They're asleep by the time I get home. I miss them. There's a lot we don't know. There's still a lot that I'm you know, anxious to see what happens. We're going to talk more about this, to be sure. It got us to thinking at the Dolphins facility today about other athletes in all sports that have gone AWOL, and a few names came to mind immediately out there. And also, I want to grade Adam Gase and his play calling. It was suspect. He admitted as much. He owned up to some really poor first-half play calling. And why... we'll play a soundbite. Why the team called timeout with about 10 seconds to go as the Chargers were trying to line up and kick a what would have been a game-winning field goal. That's next right here on The Ticket. The first place Miami Dolphins. How long are we going to be able to say that? You know, look. They play the Jets next week. If you come back with a loss from New York, New Jersey specifically, I guess, shame on you.
Yeah.
It's the freaking Jets who are doing anything and everything they can to lose every game this year.
Right. That shouldn't happen. That should not happen. And by the way, just for everybody's knowledge, they will not come back after that game. They're going straight to London, I think, after that game. They're going to fly from New York.
Oh, are they? Okay. I didn't know if they were going to spend a lot of times teams practice here till Thursday.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know that for sure, but that's what I had heard when the schedule came out, that they wanted the Jets game to be the week before so
right.
they could get to London more easily from New York than South Florida. So we'll see what they – I mean, Adam Gase doesn't have to decide that now. He doesn't have to let us know now, but I think that's probably what they'll do.
Boy, can you imagine being those West Coast teams that have to make that trip to London? As it takes long enough just to fly – across the states, and then right. you got to go across the pond. What are you looking at, 11, 12 hours?
Yeah, that's
a long one.
Right. And, of course, you know, Dolphins fans know this, of course, because it's well-publicized, but they don't have the bye afterwards, so they're likely going to go up to New York, New Jersey, over to London, back to South Florida, and then play the Titans. So that's going to be a difficult stretch, and that's why – Josh, you know, one game is one game, but I think that the victory over the Chargers, which I didn't give them much of a chance to win that after we found out the Lawrence Timmons news, because I was like, how are they going to stop Melvin Gordon? They already had to be displaced for 10 days, and they're practicing on the West Coast at a different training facility. They're having meetings in the team in a hotel and all this stuff. I just thought there were a lot of factors going against them. So for them to get that win, knowing how difficult the schedule is later on down the road and some of the logistical nightmares that they're going to face, I give them a ton of credit. Doesn't matter how it came about. The fact that they're 1-0 now, and as you just mentioned, first place in the division, good for the Dolphins.
They could be 3-0. I mean, they're, you know, after the London game is against the Saints, you know, you normally think of the Saints as a good team, but boy, they've certainly had their struggles.
They have. Tom Brady.
Three touchdowns in the first quarter.
Yeah, that's a fantasy unbelievable scenario.
Oh, I played against the guy that had him.
But, yeah.
I still won.
And your team's a juggernaut. I know, you know, we're focusing on the Dolphins today, but, man, if there was ever a fantasy football team that was a Super Bowl favorite, after 2 weeks, it'd be yours.
Well, I have led the league in scoring, and for our league, you get back roughly about $50 if you win the week. Every week they pay out a winner. I've won the first two. I was shocked. All right, let's play some sound. Let me get it up here. From yesterday. Now, again, the play calling was really suspect. We didn't know if it was Cutler who was doing this, or I know Gase sends in the plays, but Cutler, I'm sure, has latitude at the line. Was Cutler just, you know, being checked down Chad, as you say? What was the reason for that? And here's Adam Gase talking about this. He owned up to it. He said, I was more aggressive in play calling in the second half.
You know, we just had those three and outs, and I felt a little off rhythm in that second quarter. I felt like I was holding our guys back, and in that third quarter, really put it on, getting JGI the ball, finding ways to let the receivers win one-on-one opportunities.
And then he credits the players themselves. He said our offensive players were more aggressive in the second half.
We didn't really get the opportunities we wanted with Julius, you know, because of what they were playing. And then letting Jay make some plays with his feet, you know, scrambling. And those guys really took over that game. You know, we kept it fairly simple, and they won their one-on-one matchups. And that really, really changed a lot of it for us.
You know, and look, I mean, it's play calling. And you know, I didn't like the clock management. We're going to play that in a second about calling the timeout with 10 seconds to go. But I think Gase had a kind of a poor game play calling, but he adjusted in the second half. And again, he's just learning this particular club. It's, you know, a lot of the players are the same, but the quarterback is different. And his, you know, his meshing with the team, him being Cutler's meshing with the team, is a different dynamic than Tannehill. And that'll just take time to figure out what works and what doesn't.
I guess. I just, you know what? They had an extra week to prepare for this game. It's one of those where I just felt like, you know, he can say all he wants about the rhythm. You can say all you want about they need to figure things out. You know what? I'm glad he owned up to it, but it was just poor. I mean, that wasn't very good coaching. And that's
I agree.
Not what you expect from Adam Gase, who I think is a very, very good offensive mind and has been a terrific breath of fresh air for this organization. It has them going, you know, completely in the right direction. So don't misconstrue this as criticism for him as a whole. But yesterday in the first half, that was just bad. It was bad football to watch, and I think that's why some people were getting down about the team, because it's like, we heard that when Jay Cutler came in, they're going to air things out. They're going to let things loose, and it seemed like all he wanted to do was throw underneath routes to Jarvis Landry.
Look, I agree. I'm just saying, I think it was a bad day at the office, as I said, for Adam Gase. I would give him maybe, including the clock management, maybe a C-. But I also feel a hell of a lot better moving forward with Adam Gase having a bad day coaching than I would say Joe Philbin. I'm much more optimistic that Gase is just going to, the arrow is definitely pointing much further up and much steeper up than it would be under Philbin.
Yes, I agree with that. I mean I think the proof's in the pudding on that one. I mean, Joe Philbin would have been queasy after that performance.
And then he's never going to live down that word.
No, he's not. And Dolphins fans wouldn't have been able to get over it because, you know, he would have been psychologically scarred for the rest of the season. But with Adam Gase, yes, he's going to be better. The offense is going to look better. I feel good about that. I think the point you made earlier was the most important one. Jay Cutler didn't turn the ball over.
Right.
He may have tried a couple times. It didn't work. DeVante Parker bailed him out, and they're good to go because of it. And in a tight game, that can be the difference in one of those games.
Someone writes in, Texter writes in, to be fair to Cutler, Henny would have one-hopped his checkdowns in the flat. That's very good.
That's true. At times. One other observation that I had, which I thought the Dolphins had a clear matchup advantage, and it didn't pan out that they were able to exploit this, was their pass rush. I mean, they sacked Phillip Rivers once, and of all guys to get the sack was William Hayes.
I know. It was a run stopper.
Yeah, Mr. Mermaid gets the sack there. And
well, that was when Rashad Jones broke through and chased Rivers, right? And Sue and Hayes were in pursuit.
Yes, yeah. So there was a bunch of people in the backfield.
Tons of pressure on him.
And Hayes ultimately got credit for the sack. But I was surprised because the Chargers' offensive line is kind of patchwork right now, and I thought between Cam Wake, Sue, Andre Branch, even Charles Harris potentially, that they would have a better opportunity to get to Phillip Rivers. I think part of it is credit Rivers. He gets rid of the ball. He's a savvy veteran. He reads things at the line well. But that's something that I'm sure Matt Burke, though he's thrilled with the only 44 yards rushing allowed, I'm sure he would have liked to see more pressure on Rivers throughout the game.
Let's play a soundbite here because we're certainly going to talk about this at some point during the show here. 10 seconds to go. Chargers need a field goal to win the game. They're trailing 19-17 because with 65 seconds to go, Cody Parkey made a 54-yard field goal to put the Dolphins up by that score. The Chargers drove down the field, and set up a what was a 44-yard field goal, and the Dolphins called a timeout. 10 seconds to go. I'm sure a lot of people were just screaming. Like, that was Joe Philbin-esque, just screaming at the TV. What the hell are you doing? Well, here's Adam Gase addressing that, why the team called a timeout with 10 seconds to go in the game.
Well, we were trying to leave enough time to where if he made it, we could run another play. I mean, Philip was stopping all those guys trying to run on the field. The quarterback that's been doing it for about 15 years stopped him, was going to clock it with 2 seconds left. Huh. That's what was going on there. So we tried to call with 12 seconds left, but you know, we got 10. So he kicks it, makes it. At least we got a chance. Maybe start running around, throwing the ball around, see if you can get something going.
What do you think of that explanation? I still don't like the call.
I don't like the call at all. And part of it, I mean, his philosophy and where he's coming from, you kind of understand. But part of it is just reading the game. And if you're there on the sideline and you see that there's like this fire drill going on the other sideline, sure, where the Chargers are sending out their kicking unit while the offense is still on the field, they intentionally, without a timeout in their pocket, had just decided to center the ball on that last snap. So Philip Rivers just, you know, moves it to the middle of the field to try to set up the best angle for their kicker, which obviously didn't work out. But when they're running the kicking team on and the clock is ticking, at that point, it's like all hell is broken loose out on the field. If you're Adam Gase, let that continue. Let them be their own worst enemy there. And if Rivers is intending to spike the ball, which he was, he can't do so if they've got 20 players on the field. Right. So the moment he calls timeout, it's like he bailed them out of this situation in which they were running around with like chickens with their head cut off. Like Anthony Lynn, as a rookie head coach, looked like he was pulling a rookie head coach there when their team was in complete disarray. Rivers may have had an idea, but it didn't seem like the rest of the team was on the same page, and Adam Gase completely bailed them out.
Well, you know, Gase and his coaches grade the players. He'll grade himself, and I'm sure this one, even if he doesn't admit it publicly, you know, obviously he'll look at himself, how I did, what I did, the decisions my staff and I made. And this one, I think this was a definite learning moment. I think given the same circumstances, given the chaos that was going on with the Chargers on and off the field, I think looking back, even though he may not admit it publicly, I think he learns from this and doesn't do that again.
I agree.
If given similar circumstances.
I agree. And it was funny. I mean, you described it. Everybody's yelling at their TV. I think everybody was yelling at their TV, and then everybody then took to social media and was in all caps locks yelling via social media, like, what are you doing calling the timeout? I mean, nobody understood why that happened. I heard national hosts today saying, hey, the Dolphins won, but what the heck was Adam Gase doing calling a timeout there, allowing the Chargers to set up for that field goal? So, listen, bottom line, get back to the same thing we said off the top of the show. You don't apologize for anything. You survived despite some of these issues, and you won 19-17, and you get ready for the Jets now.
If you want to call into the show, give us your thoughts or opinions or questions, 786-360-0790. We're going to play some sound from Gase and players like Mike Pouncey and Juwan James talking about Jay Cutler and how they feel he did in his Dolphins regular season debut. Alongside Greg Likens, I'm Frito. We're back after this.